Angie's List is now Angie, A-N-G-I, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And they're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project is, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. That's what you want, right? I'm thinking about building out my basement in my cabin. I've been perusing Angie, looking for just the right contractor to get it done the way my wife and I want it done. Now, Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and right in your neighborhood. That's important, right? You can do comparative shopping. Get started today at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The app and the website are free to use. Angie.com or the Angie app. Go check it out today. Hello, America, and happy Monday. What a weekend it was. A big story we broke on Friday night really carried the weekend. Lots of people were reading it. It was entitled Trump Whodunit. Prosecutors admit that key evidence and document case has been tampered with, and that Jack Smith team had misled the federal court in Florida in the documents case. Very important story. I'm going to get to that in a second. But before I do, let me tell you who's going to be on the lineup today. I've been waiting for this day for a long time. J. Michael Waller. You read his columns in the Wall Street Journal, in the Washington Times, in many prominent places. He's got a great Substack called Big Intel. But most importantly, he wrote one of the most important books of the last few years called Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. And it takes a look at the ideological drift of these two agencies, the weaponization of these agencies, the focus on Americans and often at the expense of their civil liberties. It's an amazing book. It's one of the most important books, I think, written. If you ask, how did we get to Russia collusion? How do we get to the 51 intelligence agents claiming that the Hunter Biden laptop wasn't real when it was? It starts with the long historical drift of these agencies. And also, it's important to realize that when you get big intel, when you get an ideologically compromised intelligence structure, you start to get not just big intel, but bad intel. And J. Michael Waller and I are going to speak about that today. It's a great book. I highly suggest that you go grab a copy of it. It is really the most historically accurate and complete look at how these agencies drifted this way, what the current consequences are. We know a lot of those from our reporting here. And then what are the fixes? And I'll tell you one thing that I'm going to put on your map. Go study the Frankfurt School. This was a Marxist academic group of American and German philosophers, educators, thinkers, and they began this institute called the Frankfurt School in Germany between the end of World War I and the beginning of World War II, so just before the rise of Nazism and Adolf Hitler. And they were trying to find a way to remarket, rebrand many of the Marxist ideas so that they would work in the Western world like the United States of America. When you read Michael's book, you're going to see how the Frankfurt School became integrated and touched gloves and influenced our intelligence community here in the United States. Pretty remarkable reporting and good work by J. Michael Waller, who, by the way, was a CIA analyst in Latin America and, of course, became one of its great teachers in the intelligence community. But today, he is sounding the warning alarm about the state of our intelligence community. And I think that is warranted given all that we've been able to do here at Just the News. You see just a little bit every day of just how much reason we have for concern, how much cause we have for concern. All right, back to the story we broke over the weekend. By the way, today, this morning, President Trump was fined anew for speaking out against Alvin Bragg's case against him in New York, keeping in mind that the witnesses are allowed to speak and defame President Trump, but he's not in certain circumstances. The judge fined him again and then also said that he might have to put the former president in prison because it may be the only deterrent he has for the violations of this gag order. We have all of that on our front line. Meanwhile, Hamas has accepted a Egypt-Qatar-brokered ceasefire. Israel hasn't agreed to it, so it isn't really a ceasefire, right? Because we just don't know what that is, but a sign that maybe Hamas overplayed its hands with its attack this weekend. So we're going to keep an eye on that. Madeline Hubbard will have you covered all throughout that. She's our great national security reporter. All right, back to the story I broke over the weekend. It is such a significant story about the quality of Jack Smith's work, the integrity of Jack Smith's work. The rules of evidence have always required that the FBI and the Justice Department preserve evidence in the state it was found when it was seized by the government. It's evidence 101. And it's so important. If you go look at the American Bar Association, the Office of the Justice Department's rules, the FBI's rules, preserving evidence is such an important concept that FBI agents, law enforcement, sheriff's deputies, detectives, police officers, prosecutors all learn. And it's called the duty to preserve evidence. And it's important to preserve it in the state that the government received it in. Well, on Friday night, in a classic Friday night dump, Jack Smith acknowledged that he had failed to preserve the order of some of the documents in the boxes that were seized from President Trump's Mar-a-Lago raid. This is important. He said that the order of documents had been altered or jumbled, i.e. tampered with, leaving two different chronologies. There's one from the way they were scanned as digital scans, another in the physical order in the boxes. He offered many explanations for why it occurred, but none of them are that impressive. And by the way, legal experts told us this is likely a violation of the court's rules of evidence, and it could be a serious problem for prosecutors. First off was the great Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz. He said, prosecutors and investigators should never tamper with or alter evidence in their possession, including the order of documents in a box, because one never knows what may become relevant or crucial to a court or jury later in a case. That was Alan Dershowitz. Now, a second prominent defense expert I talked to, Tim Parlator, a lawyer that's been on this show, he used to work on Trump's team earlier in the classified documents case. He doesn't work there now. He said that Jack Smith's admission in this court filing was stunning. He said it reinforces the incompetence of the prosecutors on just the basic criminal investigations and prosecution work that you're supposed to do. But at a deeper level, the loss of specific document locations is a destruction of exculpatory evidence, Parlator told me. I went through all the boxes at NARA, and the document order was important because it was clear to us that the boxes had been untouched since leaving the White House, meaning President Trump didn't go through them. He didn't know he had classified documents. Those are some of the most important things. And as you know, over the history of our country on big political and criminal scandals, Watergate, Iran-Contra, Hillary Clinton's email investigation, the alteration of evidence became a very important and impactful part in the case. There's the 18 and a half minute segment of the Richard Nixon's tapes that were erased back in Watergate, right? Iran-Contra. There were documents that were shredded in an operation, I think it was by one of the secretaries. And then in Hillary Clinton's email thing, they erased the server with bleach bit. And I think they also busted up the Blackberries so that they couldn't be further reconstituted. All of those are reminders of just how important this is. Now, there's a second part of this problem for Jack Smith. It isn't just that this happened, but originally when this came up, Jack Smith's prosecutors gave a false assurance that the evidence had remained in the exact state that when the government seized it. The government now acknowledges this is inconsistent with what the government counsel previously understood and represented to the court, Jack Smith said. This is a big and important revelation. It's going to, in some ways, undercut the credibility of this operation. And so I think it's very important for us to all understand what's going on here. Now, to go read this story, look for the headline, Trump Whodunit. Prosecutors admit key evidence and document cases has been tampered with. All the details I told you about in there. You can actually read the court document. It has been in the top five stories on the site since Friday. It's one of the most impactful stories that have been out there in quite some time. So go take a look at it. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to bring J. Michael Waller on his great book, Big Intel. You're going to love it. But before we do that, a quick shout out to one of our many great sponsors, The Wellness Company. I'm looking forward. I got a special coming up in the next week with Dr. Peter McCullough. He is an innovator. He was right about COVID-19 and the mistakes that the public health agencies were making. Today, he's on the forefront of creating competition and new alternatives for Americans to get quality medical care, quality pharmaceuticals, without having to go through what we went through in the pandemic. What is that experiment? It's called The Wellness Company. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, I trust, And their new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it keeps to keeping you safe and healthy and being prepared in advance for a medical emergency. The medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak, antibiotics. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all these life-saving medications. Now, the wellness company has made a special deal for Just the News and its listeners at John Solomon Reports. They're going to give you 10% off with the promo code JUSTNEWS when you go to the website www.twc.health/justnews. www.twc.health/justnews. That's all you got to do. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and parasitics on hand when your family faces emergency. You're not waiting to try to get it from some doctor who may, or some pharmacy that may be out of it. That's what the wellness company, Dr. Peter McCullough, have done so great here. Remember to get your 10% off. If you're going to buy one of these kits, use the promo code JUSTNEWS at www.twc.health/JUSTNEWS. All right, folks, we'll be back with J. Michael Waller in just a second. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Let me tell you, folks, if there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after a night of drinking, it's with ZBiotics. ZBiotics are pre-alcohol, prebiotic drinks that are the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after a night of drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink alcohol, it gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produce an enzyme to break the byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly and you'll feel your best in the morning. Vacations, weddings, birthdays, reunions, you name it, we've got you covered. There's so much going on. So get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now. Go to ZBiotics.com/justnews to get 15% off your first order when you use the promo code JUSTNEWS at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/justnews and then use that promo code JUSTNEWS at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and all of our good times. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. A lot of you have been hearing me talk on this show about a book that has caught my fancy. I think it is the greatest compilation to date of how two of America's storied agencies have gone astray and gone from being purveyors of security to purveyors of political outcomes. The CIA and FBI, of course, is what I'm talking about. We know all about their exploits from Russia collusion to Ukraine to so many other things over the last year, the effort to make the Biden laptop appear to be something it wasn't. My next guest wrote that book, Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. He is J. Michael Waller, senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy. Michael, great to have you on the show.
Glad to be with you, John.
This is an amazing book. You have this extraordinary career. You understand the security institutions from the inside because you were in them. Talk a little bit about what you experienced that led you to write this book.
It was a long way, a long road this way. And it started when I was a kid in college, when Reagan was first president. And even then, President Reagan had a problem with the CIA in that it was not willing to assess intelligence that the Soviets were behind international terrorism, including communist guerrilla movements on our southern border. So what Bill Casey did was what he did when he was in the OSS during World War II, was brought in a bunch of amateurs, people who didn't know what they were not supposed to see, and had them go and collect intelligence to show that indeed these things were happening.
Wow. It's just amazing. And there's nothing like experiencing it to understand it and then to be able to adequately fight it. So there is a moment where, you know, there's a lot of storied moments in the CIA and the FBI's history. The FBI sometimes have had some negative moments in the 70s and 80s too, but there are lots of successes. And I think most Americans had the confidence that on any given day, the CIA and FBI was advancing the American security interests as best they could. There are always fumbles. At what point do you feel like the CIA tipped and FBI tipped into fighting the Cold War and the security threats to basically trying to carry out someone's political agenda or political vendettas?
Yeah, there were a couple different points where it sort of collapsed in stages. First, you had liberal bias throughout the CIA's history. And you could factor that in, sort of like a covert State Department in terms of the mentality. But if you factored that in, you could still, you know, it was still intelligence and the people were still trying to be objective through the lens that they saw. It was just a liberal bias because it attracted those kinds of people as analysts. What happened, though, was when the CIA became politicized and became trying to create fake intelligence to arrive at political conclusions for the purpose of influencing not just decision makers, but influencing voters, and then becoming what the CIA itself called secret agents of change in America. So that was around that really the first breaking point was right at the end of the Cold War. Wasn't so much of a breaking point. It was just sort of the sagging of the structure before it collapses. And that was at the end of the Cold War. All these people had invested all their careers in you know, fighting Soviet expansionism. And all of a sudden, there's no more Soviet Union. So what do they do? And then 9/11 hits. And there we didn't have many experts in the area. So you had this new fight terrorism mandate. And then the terrorists were pretty much wiped out, at least the first stage of them. And then they're looking for more enemies now. And by the in the huge hiring that went on after 9/11, they really were taking people fresh out of these, you know, excessively woke universities and not really vetting them. And so we get what we got. Then Obama made it all official policy starting in 2009. But again, in 2011 and into his second term.
Yeah, just remarkable. There's another dynamic I hear a lot of times from FBI agents, which is over the last two decades, the FBI went from hiring people that were most likely college educated, but really were going into law enforcement. And now they hire a lot of lawyers. People revolve back and forth from the Justice Department, which is a political institution. And the FBI has the injection of so many lawyers into the FBI had some effect in that agency.
Well, whenever you inject a place with lawyers, you're going to have a turn for the worse. But in fairness, with the FBI, as J. Edgar Hoover built it, he wasn't the first director, but when as he built it, you know, he was a trained lawyer, and he brought in mainly lawyers and accountants as our first FBI agents under Hoover. But his mission was, his very first mission at the Department of Justice before he went into the Bureau was to fight Marxists, to fight anarchists, to fight communists, because these people were bent on overthrowing our constitutional way of life. And one of his very first jobs, he was only 25 years old, was to be the head of basically the Red Squad, the Radical Division at the FBI to identify and round up foreign communists and deport them back to Russia.
Amazing. That's right. Anti-communism really drove so much of his security concerns and his agenda as FBI director. Obviously, the cooling of the Cold War obviously changed who the enemy was in many ways, right?
Well, it did in terms of which government was the most dangerous. I mean, Russia, the thing with Russia is it never got rid of its KGB. It divided it up and it renamed it. But the whole ethos of it, I mean, even today, the Russians say that the Russian intelligence services were founded in 1917 and 1918. The Russian Navy traces its back to the time of Catherine the Great, but the Russian Army traces itself back to when Leon Trotsky founded the Red Army. So they never had that de-Sovietization that say was done. You don't have German intelligence saying, "Yeah, we were founded under Hitler." So you had a thorough denazification there, and there was never a de-Sovietization in Russia. And the United States, under the Bushes or Clinton, never demanded it.
Yeah, that's really an important. That's a really important historical fact, and it lingers over a lot of what we've had. There's a moment where I think most Americans start to look and say, it feels like the tools that the intelligence and security world developed to deal with our enemies, psyops and information warfare, that they got turned against us. And I think a lot of people look at the Russia collusion case and see a lot of psyops involved in that, which is basically the ability to create a false illusion that the man who America elected president was somehow a stooge and a spy for Vladimir Putin. Of course, it wasn't true. It never was true. But the ability to create the illusion that it was true seemed to be ripped from some of the psyop tools that we developed to fight our enemies. When did CIA, FBI folks start turning their guns or resources or their intelligence capabilities on the American people?
Well, you had it throughout history. Yeah, even J. Edgar Hoover did it when, if you exclude the fact that foreign communists and anarchists are not the American people when he's rounding them up. But then again, are American communists who swear allegiance to the Kremlin, are they still Americans? Or should they be treated as Soviet agents? And in that case, are you turning against the American people by going after communists? I don't think so. But what Hoover did from time to time, he served any president. He was very bipartisan. He started under Woodrow Wilson. He spied on President Warren Harding's opponents. He spied on Franklin Roosevelt's friends and opponents on behalf of Roosevelt. Roosevelt wanted him to do this, but he never turned against any president. One can argue about the Kennedys, but even the Kennedys needed him. And he spied big time for LBJ, and Nixon, who he'd known since the 40s, finally thought, well, you know, Edgar's my friend, but he's long in the tooth. We have to get rid of him. And then that's when the FBI, Hoover died, and the FBI turned against Nixon. And the number two man in the FBI was Deep Throat to the Washington Post. So they do turn against the public. And then you have the COINTELPRO. The different penetrations and disruptions of different radical groups and movements in the United States. It wasn't against, you know, it was, most of it was directed against the Communist Party, which was Soviet funded and Soviet controlled. That's why COINTEL, counterintelligence program. That's how we get the name COINTELPRO. So it wasn't a criminal investigation. It was a counterintelligence operation. And it was years long. So anybody who's tied in with anyone in the pay of the Kremlin would have been a target of COINTELPRO. So when the time came for President Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy to tell J. Edgar Hoover to spy on Martin Luther King, it was because King had surrounded himself with several Communist Party members, Stanley Levinson and David Carr and a few others. And that expanded then to the Black Panthers, which had Cuban support and Algerian support and other foreign support and so on. So the only COINTELPRO operation that wasn't really a counterintelligence operation was the COINTELPRO against the Ku Klux Klan. And that's the one thing that the FBI is applauded for doing. But that's the one thing that wasn't spying on foreign entities. So you had that then, but you never had, you know, J. Edgar Hoover never had SWAT teams. He never had electronic surveillance of everybody in the country, practically. He never had the FISA. He never had any of these tools. Okay? So the FBI of today is far more dangerous and far more abusive than J. Edgar Hoover ever was.
That's a really great point. And you see it now, you know, the NSA program, which is really the FBI program, just using NSA's data. It just opened up a chronic and continuous surveillance state against Americans, regardless of whether you had any reason to be suspected or not. You were being caught up in a dragnet. And it seems like the threshold for not looking at this data just kept weakening and weakening. They could find any excuse to unmask or look at anyone's information. There's a moment where some safeguards are put. There's the Patriot Act, and there's the blowback against the Patriot Act. But it doesn't feel like the safeguards that were supposed to be the civil liberty safeguards ever really penetrated the culture of the counterintelligence, counterterrorism agents, the ones who we end up, you know, being a big part of the Russia collusion delusion. Why is it that some of the FBI's own rules just get blown past so easily? What's in the culture?
They're not held accountable.
That's it, right? No consequence, right?
I mean, nobody holds them accountable. The courts don't. The Justice Department doesn't. FBI's own internal affairs covers it all up. The Congress certainly doesn't. They think they do, but they don't.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's no consequence, the deterrence goes away pretty quickly. Is there, and I think there's some really great moments in this book where there's another perpetrator here or another complicitous act. Congress just really hasn't done the sort of meaningful oversight or oversight to change that the legislative branch could to solve some of these problems. Why is that? What makes Congress afraid to force the sort of changes that these agencies need to restore trust in them by the American people?
A lot of lawmakers really think it's none of their business. They think they don't have a right to know these secrets when every member of Congress is cleared. But you talk to some of them and they honestly don't. And then they hire, they look at the questions that they ask. I mean, most lawmakers ask really dumb questions. And they're written by these 23-year-old, 25-year-old staffers who are probably good people, but they don't have experience. And so, and the way the hearings are set up, it's just 5 minutes of Q&A. Well, that's great. You can filibuster a lot in 5 minutes. And then the question's gone and there's zero follow-up. And then when lawmakers, serious ones, Senator Ron Johnson, Senator Chuck Grassley, they'll write letters, but then they get the letter gets sat on for a year or two, and then they get lies and half truths in return, and they can only go as far as they can. I know Ron Johnson has said that the Senate, has cut the budget for his minority staff on his permanent subcommittee on investigations, but even when you're in the majority, let's say in the House with Jim Jordan as Judiciary Committee Chairman, and he said, we're going to have a committee just like the Church Committee, and we're going to get to the bottom of all of this. Well, you know, the Church Committee was Senator Frank Church, who was a radical Democrat in the mid-1970s, going after the CIA and its abuses, and there were plenty of abuses to look at. But even then, it was bipartisan. Even then, you had a CIA director, Bill Colby, who got his whole life was in intelligence. He'd been in the OSS. He was a cooperative witness the whole time. He testified on the Hill about 50 times in a year and a half or two. And so within a year and a half, you had the Church Committee. They had about 130 or more investigative counsel and investigative staff and you name it. The best of the best that Washington, D.C. can produce in terms of talent. Going after the agency. So Jim Jordan hired, what, five people?
Hardly an army going up against the sort of abuses that need to be highlighted. It's pretty remarkable. There is a great line. I think it's in the book. I've also seen it in some of the columns you've written. But chronicling the parasitic infiltration of the CIA and FBI, Big Intel shows how normal intelligence functions have given way to political correctness and never-ending, quote-unquote, pride propaganda, trapping agents in the DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, House of Mirrors. This is sort of when the Marxism becomes sort of formalized into the federal regulatory and federal training environment. How big an impact did DEI and sort of this woke far-left agenda have on the CIA and FBI?
It's had a huge effect. First, it came in independently, meaning not from the top. It came in through the bottom and organized into cell groups, like the old Communist Party cells. And the people would meet according to whatever grievance they had and whatever victim status that they sought. And they were there. This has been in the private sector and in the universities for a long time. But the CIA brought it in. Later, the FBI did. They called it employee resource groups, or in the agency, their agency resource groups. And they identified like-minded people with similar grievances, and then they helped recruit more in from below. So when Obama came in, and when he put finally John Brennan in as CIA director, It happened under Panetta before, but it was really Brennan who had, he was the ideologue. Elevated those individuals through the system and then used diversity, equity, and inclusion as the political litmus test for promotion. So if you fall under DEI criteria, you're promoted whether or not you have the merits and whether the agency needs you in those places or not. And that was the political, like the old Soviet Zampolit system of political commissars that was brought up, now pulled from the top. And it was throughout the entire intelligence community. This was done by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence and Director James Clapper. So he was working across the whole intelligence community. And Brennan was focusing on CIA. And then Comey over at FBI, and then Ray just continued it. So it's pervasive now. So that, think of it, it started, let's say, 2009, 2010, it really got underway, 2011. Those people now are halfway through their careers. So they're in mid-management now, and then the ones who've been artificially promoted, like the deputy director for analysis, for intelligence analysis, she's a Hamas supporter. Right after Hamas issued that call for jihad last October, she changed her Facebook page to have a Palestinian banner illustrating. She's the number two analyst chief in the CIA. So you have that. And this is just the visible stuff we see, to say nothing of when Gina Haspel, Trump's CIA director, made those intersectionality, you know, video ads of this crazy, admittedly mentally ill woman who speaks only about herself, nothing about mission, nothing about country, only about herself and how perfect she is. And she's suffering from imposter syndrome, and she's intersectional, and she's not going to let men tell her what to do. And she's pictured in the ad with two diversity awards, with Brennan and then another one with Haspel. And this was the type of person the CIA is actively seeking to recruit. You go to @FBIJobs on Twitter, X, and you'll see similar, just weird stuff. With the exception of scientists and engineers and tech people, the Bureau is looking for the wokest of the woke.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And a lot of this DEI ideology traces its roots to our greatest enemies, right? China and the Soviets and the Marxists. Why is it that more people in the agency and the Bureau don't speak up and try to fight this? Because they must know that this plays right into China, Russia's and other Iran and other other enemies' hands. I mean, this is a potential mortal threat if this philosophy continues to take grip of these agencies, no?
Sure. Well, yeah, you had people inside the system who saw this happening, but you don't get promoted by complaining. You don't get promoted by speaking out, even in private in the system. So let alone going to Congress or being a whistleblower. And then when you have some people who do go to Congress, like some people from the FBI, what did the congressional staff do? They called the FBI director's office and said, hey, we've got a whistleblower here who needs help. Can you give him a hand? What kind of, and then their careers were destroyed. Their lives were destroyed. They weren't even allowed to quit the FBI, and they weren't allowed to be fired from the FBI. They were suspended, meaning the FBI didn't allow them to go get another job.
Nope. They're literally punished, unable to make any money to support their family, right?
Yeah, made them destitute. And there's one of them, Kyle Serafin, he's got several kids, you know, he's got a young family, and they all had to live in a parents or in-laws house for a year, living off their savings. And then finally he just said, you know what, I'm going to start a podcast, and I'm just going to start networking other people together. But you see the examples that have been made of these folks. Same for the CIA. So now for your performance evaluations, you're evaluated on how well you go along with the DEI agenda. It's so bad in the FBI that if you mispronoun the same person more than three times, that's considered harassment, and that goes against you.
Yeah, and now they've made that the rule for workplaces all across the country with the new rule that the EEOC put into place last week. There's an odd thing about the current CIA director, who obviously comes out of the diplomatic ranks, and he seems to make more diplomatic trips than Secretary Blinken. Is it a good idea to have our CIA director involved in diplomatic negotiations when his job is really to monitor security threats?
It's not in the law for the CIA director to be a top diplomat. It might be necessary for the CIA director to travel abroad to talk to certain leaders about intelligence matters, but it's like CIA Director Burns is the real Secretary of State. So now you have a deep state taking over our diplomatic services with some of the most sensitive issues on earth. And who does he report to at the White House? Now, he's handling the Middle East right now. He's handling Israel and Hamas. He reports to Maher Bitar at the White House, who's a Palestinian former UNRWA employee, who's a pro-Hamas activist, who's in charge of all intelligence programs for the United States.
Amazing to look at the roster and just their backgrounds and their ideologies, which is something that you've done better than almost anyone in the last 5 or 6 years. You've put it together in ways that I haven't seen. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Mike, I want to talk a little bit about how we fix this. I also want to talk a little bit about the China threat. You spent a lot of time, I think, earlier in your career in Latin America. China wasn't nearly as aggressive as it is now. I'd love to talk a little bit about that because I think a lot of people don't understand just how scary the future is with China. But first, we'll take a quick commercial break if that's okay with you. We'll be right back after these messages. Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor-selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down. My blood sugar is down. My weight's down. My health is up. My sleeping patterns are better. My metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. More with our exclusive interview with J. Michael Waller, a former CIA analyst, currently the senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy and the author of one of my favorite books in the last decade, Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. Michael, this has been a great conversation. I want to turn a second to a little bit in your career. Obviously, you spent some time in Latin America early on in your career. China was maybe just awakening as a foreign power trying to infiltrate. Today, they're everywhere, right? They're in China. They're in Cuba. They're in Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Africa. They're pushing us out of Africa in some places. Is the China threat as serious as it feels when people just read the basic news headlines these days?
Oh, I think it's much worse. It's a colossal country, and it's run by one man who's taking complete control of the party that runs that country. And the party is not just some corporate entity. It's an ideological force. It's an ideological driver. So there's an ideological basis to everything the party and therefore the Chinese government does. They want to become the world's sole superpower, and they're going to do it through ways that we've never anticipated. So back when we were warning in the 90s about Chinese takeover of parts of our own hemisphere, people were laughing at us. It was exactly 25 years ago. I went down to Panama as a journalist and saw firsthand how the Chinese regime back then was preparing to take control of both ends of the Panama Canal, literally as we were in the process of handing over our remaining presence to the Panamanian government. And the Republicans in the Senate, to their credit, held a couple of hearings on it. They were pretty alarmed. But the Clinton administration at the time and a lot of the Bush-type Republicans were literally either saying that they had no idea, in congressional testimony, you know, that they had a chance to prepare for, that they had no idea, or that it was really exaggerated and it's really not a threat. And now look at they're building they took over a Taiwanese-built port in El Salvador. They're taking over ports in Ecuador and Peru. They've tried in Argentina. We'll see if Milei
Caribbean now. I see a lot of infiltration in the Caribbean.
And then they took over, well, not just those individual islands is bad enough, but they also took over the Soviet SIGINT base, one of the Soviet SIGINT bases in Cuba. So, and they built very strong relations with the Venezuelan regime. So they, you know, John Kerry was serious when he was Obama's Secretary of State and said that we are renouncing the Monroe Doctrine.
That's right. Yeah. It is an extraordinary thing. There's a moment in the Biden presidency. There is a program that began under the Trump years inside the FBI that had a significant impact, China Initiative. It was clearly focused on the fact that the Chinese use academic visas and academic exchanges and what look like harmless academic exchanges and scientific partnerships to really create economic and intelligence espionage. And Joe Biden just shuts it down a year into his presidency. Right after the director, Chris Wray, gave a speech saying how important this program was. It was clear he was pleading for the program. We didn't know it was in jeopardy at the time. The idea that a sitting president would shut down one of our biggest avenues of countering China influence, what message does that send to the world? What message did it send to our woke intelligence agencies?
Well, it sends a message that it's great to be woke because, after all, going after the Chinese is racist.
Well, that's right. And that started with the pandemic, right? You're xenophobic if you dare question where the origins of this virus may have come from. How significant was it that for you that the intelligence agencies, you know, working with Big Pharma, working with the big public health institutions in the federal government, were able to suppress the lab leak theory for so long? I mean, literally suppress it with big tech sensors, the whole works.
Yeah, that came from the top because you had people inside who could tell very well precisely where it came from. We have people whose entire professions have been dedicated for decades to finding out where these things come from. So they were silenced. And then obviously, I think you reported it, didn't you, that the CIA was, the leadership of the CIA was giving bonuses to analysts who would change their analysis to let the Communist Party of China off the hook.
Yep. Yeah, it's just remarkable. And the more we learn about the level of intelligence we had early on, I mean, the FBI knew in the Energy Department were early adopters of this, but they stood silent during a lot of that suppression. One of the things that I think you do a great job in the book is, you know, you have big intel and then you have big tech. And there's now this revolving door between big intel and big tech, former FBI people going to big tech people coming in. That has created an incredible ally to carry out big intel's wishes in the digital realm where we all have our communications now. How serious a threat is that revolving door?
It's extremely serious because it's ideologically motivated, first of all. So it's not just a question of people abusing power, and then once Congress or the courts put some limitations on it, then they'll recognize their boundaries. You know, that's all understandable, but it's ideological. So they're waging an ideological war with us. And these are companies whose business model is based on appeasing the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, one of the biggest markets in the world.
At best. So if think of it, you're an FBI official and you put in your 25 years and you want to check out, and you're making, you know, say $150 a year plus pennies, and you get to keep your clearance if you've behaved well, and then you get to go to work for a big company making, you know, $500,000 or more a year plus stock options like these ones do, or even more, go into government contracting and then set up your own contracting company. You can make millions this way. So if you just go along to get along and don't make waves, and then use those fancy credentials that you have gained at taxpayer expense all your life, you can become extremely wealthy once you leave these intelligence organizations, as long as you follow the new rules.
Yeah, but boy, the lure of money makes it easy for that revolving door to flip quickly. And you're seeing fewer and fewer FBI agents stay the full tenure. A lot of guys would stay 30, 32, 33 years to the mandatory retirement age. A lot of these guys are bailing at 20, 22, 23 years because they know that payday is on the other side of the big tech wall. And you're right, the lure of money just becomes so, so important. I wanted to flip to another truism of this. As these agencies become more woke, as they become more ideological and less security-oriented, the big intel mentality has also resulted in some bad intelligence. We had a recent story this weekend where we thought we killed an Al-Qaeda operative in attack. I didn't. We killed some civilians, not the guy we thought we were getting. The signs that we're getting bad, unactionable intelligence that's being treated as actionable intelligence growing. This is a very important part in your book. It isn't just an ideological battle. It's a quality control battle right now inside these agencies, right?
It's a quality control battle. And then there's a sense of impunity where, yeah, we can wipe out this family, but, you know, no one's going to hold us accountable. And I mean, there are tragedies when you make a mistake. It's one thing to make a mistake. We can deal with that, as awful as these mistakes can be. But it's another thing where you can make a mistake with impunity, and then you can make a mistake based on non-information or false information. So just think for a second, if you're an intelligence officer, your job, or an analyst especially, your job is to get information and interpret it as best you can with your colleagues, and you're going to have different points of view to arrive at the best conclusions for decision makers to make, you know, the best decisions that they want based on the intelligence. But if you're being pressured to lie, if you're being pressured to change your pronouns, change the entire structure of the English language for political reasons, say that men are not men and women are not women, and America's a bad place founded by racist white men for the purpose of enslaving everybody else, then your mission becomes first to lie all the time. You have to lie, either because you believe it's true, that's lying in one way, because you're pushing your agenda, but then going along to get along just to keep your job and you have to lie, this completely breaks down the integrity of the intelligence process. The same in the FBI. If you have, well, intelligence on the national security front, but then evidence on the criminal front, if you're no longer telling the truth in the FBI, what does that mean for rules of evidence?
Yeah, no, it is a big question. And we just saw an instance this weekend where the classified documents got jumbled by Jack Smith. Basic 101 criminal rules of evidence violations. And it's just stunning to think, in one of the most high watch cases and one of the most politically important cases in American history, that prosecutors could actually fail to keep and protect evidence in the state it was supposed to be protected in. There is an amazing moment, an amazing theme, I think, in this book. And I didn't do it. You touched on it a little bit in the beginning, but I think it's worth going back to and digging in a little deeper. We talked about the sort of Marxist academic culture, the DEI culture, oppressor oppressed, CRT. There's a lot of roots at the Frankfurt School. It's a very important part of the book. Tell us a little bit about those academics and those agitators at Frankfurt School and how they ultimately got their digs into places like the CIA.
Think of it. What the FBI was built to do was to defend us against foreign ideological infiltration and subversion. That was one of the FBI's main jobs. And by statute, it's still there in terms of fighting foreign disinformation and propaganda by federal law. The CIA was built to defend against Soviet communist subversion and expansion, and they both failed at this. So when the Frankfurt School, this was a school that was set up within Goethe University in Frankfurt in Weimar, Germany. So this is right after World War One, in 1923 or 24. And the year before, the Soviets had and their allies, the leaders of the different communist parties from around the world, they met at the Marx Engels Institute in Moscow, and they said, hey, we're not going to be able to replicate Bolshevik-style revolutions in the West. Let's think of a new way to do it. So they developed this institute to study social and economic change, but with evidence on the social. They set it up in Frankfurt, Germany, as a new way of radicalizing the Western countries. And that became the Frankfurt School. And the idea was to collapse Weimar Germany, collapse the middle, tear the whole middle out, so then it becomes so polarized that the whole thing collapses, and hopefully for the communists, they would be able to take over. Well, Hitler ended up doing it first. So a group of the Frankfurt School leaders moved to the United States with the negotiation of a Soviet intelligence officer. They and Columbia University then hosted them and provided the academic cover for them to run their theories and training here. So they ended up training people like Abby Hoffman and Angela Davis and developing new theories. You had this, you know, completely undisciplined new left movement. They just wanted to just wreck everything. And they said, well, don't wreck it for the sake of wrecking it. Let's wreck it with a purpose and be disciplined about it. So you had people like Herbert Marcuse, who had been a Bolshevik supporter and then a complete communist all of his life. He joined the OSS in World War II, and to this day, the CIA calls him one of its own. He was a Soviet operative. He developed what we now know. He's one of the main developers of what we now know as critical theory. And his idea, critical law theory, criticized everything, criticized all of our institutions, all our Judeo-Christian heritage, Greco-Roman, Democratic, Republican-type traditions, going all the way that far, really all the dead white guy stuff. Go after all of that. And down to the nuclear family, tear it all apart, tear society all apart. And of course, this is what we have. And now you have the CIA and the FBI have fully embraced this and are pushing it on all of their personnel and then pushing it out on the public.
Remarkable.
So they've adopted a weapon that was developed by the founder of what became the KGB, Felix Chuzinski. He was there at the first meeting.
That's just extraordinary. Laundering Marxist ideas so that they could seep into Western society. And now today, because educators and these teachers unions eject a lot of this, these new recruits for the FBI, say they're already preconditioned to believe this stuff because they were getting pelted by it all through their academic careers before they got into it. It's a perfect system. Frankfurt, probably had no idea how successful it would be, but it's such a fun part of the book because a lot of people didn't realize the connectivity between the intelligence community and not only the philosophies, but some of the players. All right, so we've depressed people a lot, Michael. People are probably listening like, oh my God, this is not fixable. This is so depressing. We're done. You have some big thoughts about how we roll this back, how we get the FBI and CIA back to what they're supposed to do, security and out of the ideological and political espionage world. Give us some thoughts about what the 2024 election could potentially afford and what sort of solutions a Trump presidency could bring if there is a second Trump presidency.
Well, you just seem to touch on it right there, John. When in our history have we ever been at a point where if, you know, you seem to imply, or at least I understood it that way, if Trump is allowed to win, and imagine that ever being the case before right now. So we're anticipating that he might not win because they might not let him win. If he is not allowed to, if he wins and he's not allowed to take office, it's going to be a catastrophe for us because this will still continue. He didn't do anything about it when he was president because he didn't understand it, and his team wasn't really much of a team, and they kept, they had the CIA run itself when they appointed Gina Haspel. They put the FBI in charge of itself when they put in a weakling like Christopher Wray. He's just a Beltway inside lawyer who made millions inside the Beltway. He just let the extremists inside the FBI run him as if they were running him as an operation. So if you don't have a president who comes in before Election Day with his team already assembled, a team that trusts each other, a team that's vetted politically and vetted in terms of being clearable or having security clearances, and then armed with the executive orders during the transition already written up so that on the very first day, just like Obama did it, just like Biden did it, you repeal the executive orders that are still on the still there under Obama, from Obama, and you repeal the Biden executive orders on day one. And then you have your own executive orders to start to bring the bureaucracy into line. You put all your people in place as a real team. You get rid of all the careerists, most of them anyway, on the National Security Council staff, which Trump did not do. And you bring them in, and then you have a strong attorney general who can rearrange the State Department. Now, the Justice Department, rather. This part is key, because the FBI was founded not by an act of Congress. There's no law creating the FBI. It was created by an attorney general memorandum. So have another attorney general, the future one, write another memorandum saying, you know, we need the most of the functions that the FBI has. We need to hunt foreign spies. We need to fight terrorism. We need to fight child trafficking. We need to fight interstate crime. But we don't need an FBI to do that. It's run its course. It's gotten too big and too powerful. And we have other agencies that are already doing it too. So you parcel out the essential FBI functions and personnel to those other agencies, a criminal division to go to, say, the U.S. Marshals and so forth. And you have an orderly way of doing it so that the bad guys don't get the upper hand. And then you just take a stump grinder to the rest of it. That would be one part of it. And then you take the actual federal agents and you don't allow them to carry weapons. So the FBI, for the first many years under Hoover, the agents did not carry weapons. They went in with federal authority, but they needed the local and state authorities to be the armed police. And we have to do that again. We shouldn't have federal agents being able to trample the rights of citizens at the state and local level. They can do it. Those federal agents can do it fine with the state and local cops. The next thing is to force, to push down a lot of the federal law enforcement functions down to the states where they belong. So you need some federal ones, of course, but you push them down to the states. And then for states that are too small to be able to afford it, you take the block grants from the savings of breaking up the FBI and getting rid of the unnecessary functions. You use that funding as block grants to help states that need to get up to speed on this. So, and then you empower the sheriffs more, especially in states where the sheriffs have a lot of authority, in the South and in the West, where the states, the sheriffs can tell federal agents to go take a hike, but they're not going to help because the federal agents need them as their eyes and ears and often as their administrative offices. But the sheriffs are not bound to accede to those requests or demands. So if a sheriff thinks it's unjust, empower him, and everybody votes for sheriff in the elections. We just don't think about it when we vote. We just vote, if this one's a Democrat, this one's a Republican, I'll vote accordingly.
Now, there may be much larger stakes in the future should this reorganization occur. There's one last part of this. So there's a lot of amazing thoughts in this book. And folks, if you haven't gone and gotten this book, you are making a mistake. Anyone who's watched my reporting or the great work that so many other great reporters have done in chronicling FBI, CIA, NSA abuses, this is the ultimate book. It ties it together. It makes it understandable. It gives you a historical perspective how it evolved this way. Go get J. Michael Waller's Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. It's available everywhere. Also, subscribe. I'm a huge fan of this. Michael has an incredible Substack called Big Intel. Go check it out. It is an incredible Substack. I read it often. I want to finish in a place where everything that you put in this book together to make it understandable really hits the intentions of the Founding Fathers, and that is the war that currently is going on truth, the war that's going on free speech. The First Amendment was first for a reason for our Founding Fathers. But you've done a lot of work in the follow-up to the release of your book, some really great columns about the disinformation industry, which is really the alliance of big tech and big intel together. It's pretty remarkable how far government is contemplating and activating efforts to keep the American people from being able to say what they want, when they want. Did you ever imagine you'd live in an era of America where this was possible?
No, never, never, never. And it's even worse than what we've seen so far in the FBI or with the Twitter files or these other things, because now you have the Federal Communications Commission is now taking control of the internet.
Yeah, this is huge.
Oh, and it's worse than FBI censorship, because that was narrow, right? That was just aimed at certain people. Now you have the FCC, which is a five-person bipartisan commission. It's supposed to be independent, but it's answering to the Biden White House. And they are going to force internet service providers, that's like AT&T and, you know, the others who provide the actual service, to censor the content. It's like censoring phone conversations, but censor just the news, censor, you know, big intel, censor anybody, where they don't have the desire or the authority to do that anyway. But now it's creating forcibly going to weaponize the internet service providers against half the country.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. You did a great job, I think it was the end of March, early April, of helping people understand what this plan is. And literally what it does is it doesn't allow the information to ever even get out of the box. Now things gets out of the box and then someone tries to censor it or put a disclaimer note on it. Now you wouldn't get out of the box the second you were shooting your information out. It could be cut off at the gatekeeper. It is an extraordinary threat to American free speech. Michael, this is a conversation I could keep having for hours, and we should keep it going and have a few more of these sessions in the next month. But this is an incredible book, and it has history. It is well researched and chronicled. It has solutions. What is the next phase as we wrap up here? What is the next phase for you? Where, with all the great writing you do in the Wall Street Journal, Fox News, on your Substack, there is the election ahead. The election then will, I think, render a verdict from the American people. Next year is probably one of the most critical years if we want to fix this mess that has been festering for some time, right?
Yeah, it's been festering. It's like if you ignore your health and you even know you see some of the signs, but you don't do anything about it. And then one day you're at stage four and you wonder why. That's where we're at now.
That's a great point. We are at that moment.
But I've got a good friend who has been, he's just got out of stage four cancer and he's defeated his cancer. So
Wow. You
know it's possible.
There is
hope. Even when you're at stage four. Yeah.
That's a good thing. Do we have, obviously President Trump is pretty determined. He understands what happened to him in the first administration and both from his appointees and the people below him. Beyond President Trump, do you see other leaders and shakers in Congress and the tech world, people who can take this bull by the horn, wrestle it to the ground, and preserve the America we've come to appreciate for so long?
Well, I don't know where we would be without Elon Musk. That's for sure. If he hadn't liberated Twitter and turned it into X and made it a free speech platform, I mean, look at what the amazing things he's doing. And there are others out there like him who not like him, but I mean, they've got a similar mindset, and some of them are starting to come forward. We've got the state of Texas, the state of Florida, state of Louisiana, and a few other places around the country that Arkansas, Missouri, they're fighting back now at the state level. So I think the real fight is going to be at the states, where you've got strong governors or strong legislatures or just plain old strong voters who are making these demands, and they're fighting. You know, this big case with Missouri versus Biden right now is just magnificent. It's gone all the way to the Supreme Court. So there's plenty of ways to fight back at this thing. It's just a question of us getting the right focus and getting the fighting at the weak areas where the regime hasn't been able to entrench itself yet.
It is an extraordinary moment in history. This is our generation's calling card, our moment to take stock and fix this, or we're going to hand off a country that was far worse than we inherited, which will be the first generation that really could say that. Michael, you've served your country for the CIA in Central America, but I think this book is one of the great public services of your career. It puts into perspective, it educates us all in ways. We got the trees and the forest separated for the first time. We got a 30,000 foot view of what was really going on. An incredible, incredible piece of literature and research. I really want to thank you for it.
Thank you, John. It means a lot.
Yeah, a lot of fun. We're going to get you back on often. Great, great job. All right, Michael, we're going to let you go, folks. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back in a few minutes to wrap things up right after these messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. A big thank you to J. Michael Waller spending so much time on a thoughtful analysis of what's right and wrong with the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, our big intel agencies, why big intel has led to bad intel, something we're painfully aware of. We had a story over the weekend that someone that they had struck with a drone strike that they thought was an Al-Qaeda leader turned out to be a civilian. Bad intel. Had the wrong guy. We blew up the wrong person. That's, as Michael Waller said, a real potential symptom of the ideological drift, leftward drift of these intelligence agencies to capture the Marxism, all the things that he was talking about. All right. Also, a big thank you to the wellness company. Keep in mind, they've got those emergency medical kits. You'll have your medicines on hand when you need them, not waiting for a prescription, not waiting for a doctor's appointment. This is the best gold standard for telemedicine today. Go to the wellness company at www.twc.health/justnews. Use the promo code justnews. You're going to get 10% off plus rush shipping. That's always a good thing. All right. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports. Until then, God bless you and have a great night. And God bless this extraordinary country of the United States of America, as he always has. Hey, folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion-dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653 or gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.